originally published on Wikipedia and then here on May 10, 2014. Sharia is the most repulsed and reprehensible word on the minds of people. It is the synthesis of the binary source of injunctions, book/script and prophetic practices and instructions, and presents a package of divine injunctions as an eclectic, epochal posse comitatus to the people. Sharia, corpus juris of more than 1,000 messengers, from Moses to Muhammad, including those of the Abrahamic lineage, having huge followings in our times, peace be upon them all, is the topic of this discourse. Given the overwhelmingly rampant disenchantment from religions, across the board, stemmed mainly from thematically incongruous sermons of religious leaders. It is one of the reasons for this befuddlement. A canonical religious medium due to sacrilegiously odious, but cogent discourses by ingenious leaders has become an anathema for votaries and non-votaries alike. The skepticism about religious dogmas has also been ossified due to the inadvertent attitudes of people on the one hand and the commoditization of the religions by the religious patriarchy on the other. The outcome is that this world, which was already a place for testing and training, has become even more inimical. This intellectual dogmatism, a gift from our most learned and revered religious leaders, has pushed this sacred sequel ad infinitum into disrepute and rejection. This disturbing scenario impelled me to dwell on this arduous but quintessential subject. Though, it would be naive to expect a revolutionary change in the understanding of people by this one piece. It may, however, be hoped that it would, at least, present an opportunity to think about and rediscover this sacred sequel which does not belong to Muslims exclusively. A brief history/background, appealing to the contumacy and intellectual dogmatism stemming from the human disposition and cognitive sense perception, would be expounded upon. There would neither be a deliberate effectuation of the point of view of one religion over the other, nor an effort, even the feeblest one, to present any judgment as to who is right and who is wrong. The human mind is evidently yet evolving to accommodate the comprehension of the sublime merits of synchronicity, to obviate the sequential differences which are causing havoc. Another reason why a judgment would be refrained from is, owing to the subliminal, thought that a complete harmonization in this matter may not even be the goal of the Creator, for the implementation of His travailing scheme of retribution. Every messenger is given specific injunctions to put into practice as a sample for his disciples to follow. That is Sharia defined as, path to be followed or in a literal sense the way to a watering place. It is the Creator who, with His absolute sovereignty, knowledge and wisdom, may assign the most proper way to be followed. Since it deals with the right or wrong way to the Creator, it is beyond human capacities to undertake such a mammoth task. It should be borne in mind that Sharia, despite being an Arabic word, is not Muslim exclusivity. It refers to all those messengers who were given the message to be delivered. Every one of them had his own Sharia and was to be followed by the community/nation of that prophet/messenger. It is also worth noticing that the message of all the prophets/messengers, from Adam to Muhammad, peace be upon them, had remained the same, whereas the Sharia has been subjected to change, according to the necessities of the time, locale, and the psychological reflexes of the people. A renowned exegetist, Abdullah bin Abbas, has proved this from the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Imran, 3-7, which says that all religious systems have been in agreement and none of these was abrogated. It has, however, been the practice that with the descent of a new prophet/messenger, Sharia of the new prophet/messenger took over with the required changes. Several examples from the history of Judaism and Islam are a manifest affirmation of this process, where certain things which were forbidden under Judaic law are allowed under Islamic Sharia. The core message, however, remained the same and is immutable. Adherents of Judaism rejected Jesus Christ and His Sharia, and so did the Christians of Muhammad. Then both joined hands and became the sailors of the same boat, rejecting Muhammad and his Sharia. This is at the very root of the disjunctive sequel. The system of Sharia directly addresses the very nature on which man has been created. It affords a package, which is explained by juxtaposing the merits and demerits of traversing the right path or straggling. It, on the one hand, lures those of a good nature towards good deeds and obedience and warns those of the other traits of punishment. There are 5 established sources of Sharia. Primary source, Sharia originates from the direct commandments of the Creator with the right to man to interpret and explain these commandments by means of analogical deductions and through other processes. The first source had always been the book or the script of the Creator given to the prophet/messenger. The second source Sunnah is the practices/traditions adopted and instructions given by the Prophet/messengers. It includes what is said, done, and approved by the Prophet/messenger. The third source is Imam, the consensus of the opinion of scholars/learned people of the religion, developed within the parameters set in the book/script and the practices of the Prophet/messenger. This source plays an important role in the development of the law, thereby providing a broad vehicle for progress and reconstruction. It provides a detailed understanding derived from the book and practices of the Prophet/messenger, covering the myriads of problems that arise in the course of man's life. In fact, the ideal code of conduct or a pure way of life which is Sharia has a much wider scope and purpose than an ordinary legal system in the Western sense of the term. The Sharia through this process aims at regulating the relationship of man with the Creator and man with man. The fourth source Qayyas is the analogical deductions by the learned men of the religion within the parameters of the given book/script and the practices adopted by the Prophet/messenger of the time. It could precisely be defined in the theological parlance as an analogy or analogical deduction, providing an instrument to cope with the growing needs and requirements of society, which ought to be agreed upon by the religious scholars termed as Imam. In other words, it is a legal process introduced in order to arrive at the logical conclusion of a certain law on a certain issue that has to do with the welfare of the people. It was introduced by a prominent Muslim scholar from Iraq, Abu Hanifa. The fifth source, Istisna, is juristic preference or equity of jurists. It affords elasticity and adaptability to the religious legal system. This particular source deals with matters which are, though not specifically related to Sharia, but are of public interest at large. Developed by a prominent Muslim scholar, Imam Malik. Ijtihad is yet another concept which means an effort or an exercise to arrive at one's own judgment. In the wider sense, it means the use of human reason in the elaboration and explanation of the Sharia law. It covers a variety of mental processes, ranging from the interpretation of the text of the book/script and the assessment of the authenticity of the practices/instructions of the Prophet/messenger. Qayyas or analogical reasoning, then, is a particular form of Ijtihad, the method by which the principles established by the book/script, practices of the Prophet, and the consensus are to be extended and applied to the solution of new problems not expressly regulated before. Ijtihad, therefore, is an exercise of one's reasoning to arrive at a logical conclusion on a legal issue done by jurists to deduce a conclusion as to the effectiveness of a legal precept in the religion. A recent development is an induction of syncretism in Sharia, broadening its horizon even more. Syncretism represents the reconciliation of science, philosophy, religion, reason, and prophecy, though within the constraints of Qayyas. For the understanding of the reader's five major crimes and their punishments which fall under the purview of Islamic Sharia, widely considered to be grotesque and cruel, would be briefly expounded upon. Attention, however, needs to be paid to the most stringent system employed in the production of flawless and absolutely sound proof of the crime committed, before awarding the commensurate punishment. The crux of these punishments is instilling awe in the minds of the criminals to keep society from chaos and anarchy. On the other hand, the stringency of the conditions in the production of the proof makes the dispensation of these punishments a rarity. There is a very subtle difference between man-made law and the divine law. Man-made law always seeks out the proof to punish, whereas divine law always seeks out the doubt to forego and forgive the prescribed punishment. It is the most beautiful twofold expression of the divine mercy. On the one hand, it absolves the accused, and on the other, the societal milieu is shielded from the scars. It would now be left to the readers to decide in favor of or against these punishments and the hue and cry thus generated. Although the system of Sharia encompasses the whole life cycle, the discussion, however, be restricted to the core issues of the crimes and punishments handled under Sharia. Though most crimes committed result in the intermingling of the violations of the rights of the Creator and the created, although, in some cases, the predominance belongs to the rights of the Creator and others to those of the created. The categorization is thus determined by the predominance of the rights of either. In the former case, it is classed as hudud, whereas in the latter as qazaz. The significance and implications of these are discussed in the following paragraphs. Before embarking on the explanation of these concepts, it is imperative to understand a few significant terminologies used by Islamic Sharia for the conceptual clarity and understanding of the practical implications. 1. The rights of the Creator. The crimes determined as violations of the rights of the Creator are awarded prefix punishments without any recourse, mitigation, or intercession by any human being, regardless of his/her status. That's why it is called HUD, limit. Plural hudud. In the HUD category, no one has the right to reduce, increase, or abolish the punishment meted out by the Creator. Even the hearing or recommendation of any kind is impermissible. Should the holder of the right elect to forgive the offense, it would not be forgiven, and the HUD would still apply. 2. The rights of fellow human beings. The crimes committed against fellow human beings, such as fraudulent acquisition of property or killing, is dealt with by causes. Even retaliation. In the category of causes, even retaliation, i.e. life for life, wound for wound, the aggrieved party or its legal heirs/guardians may forgive the culprit, after taking causes. HUD punishment would still apply. 3. Tazirat. Penal law. The crimes which are not categorized under the above two classes are dealt with in accordance with the penal code of the land or the discretion of the judge as the attending circumstances of the land may demand. Should the aggrieved party or the holders of the rights decide to forego and forgive the criminal, the penal law of the land or the discretion of the judge, in the general interest of the public and society at large, would still be applied as deemed necessary. The essence is that the act of forgiveness on the part of the holder of the rights, though benevolent, should not be misused/misconstrued and let the criminal go unscathed, since the state still has, across the board, the responsibility of the other residents of the land. This is a modus operandi of universal character in all situations. The punishments in such circumstances are usually physical and lesson-oriented, such as lashes. There is yet another concept of immense significance, maharba, derived from the word war, synonymous with terrorism, a currently popularized term, used in the context of HUD punishment. The crimes of this category are a cause of disturbance of public peace and spreading disorder in the land. They are considered to be waging war against the Creator, His Messenger, and the state. This term applies to the group or individuals who use the force of arms to commit a crime, such as highway robbery or sea piracy, etc. This distinction is meant to distinguish between those who indulge in common crimes such as pickpocketing or thievery, etc. from those described above, and are liable for the HUD punishment. Islamic Sharia has declared only 5 crimes subject to the law of the HUD. These are 1. Robbery. 2. Theft. 3. Adultery. 4. False accusation of adultery. 5. Drinking wine. Let us see how the punishments are determined for these crimes. When it comes to establishing the crime committed and the proof thereof, the most stringent conditions are employed. Should even a single condition, out of those prescribed, be found missing, the HUD punishment would stand dropped. In fact, even a shred of doubt found in the proof will be enough to cause the HUD to be dropped. For example, in the case of adultery, there is a requirement of 4 eyewitnesses. These witnesses, in the first instance, have to be of impeccable integrity and practicing adherence of the religion, who can be vouched for by other residents of the neighborhood. If all the conditions are not satisfied in the production of proof or there are less than 4 such witnesses, the HUD punishment would stand dropped. Similarly, in the case of theft or robbery, if there is any shortfall or doubt in the proof of crime, the HUD punishment of cutting the hand and foot would stand dropped. The provision of suitable conditions for the procurement of sustenance is one of the conditions on the part of the government, in the absence whereof the HUD punishment would not take effect. There is a lucid display of the practicality of this system in Saudi Arabia, where the level of crimes is emblematically low. Shops are not locked or shut down during the customary timings of prayers, and nothing gets stolen or goes missing. It is, as claimed, the awe of the punishment in the temporal world, instilled fear of the Creator and the consciousness of the damnation in the hereafter, which is the catalyst for this remarkable system of Sharia. Greater than how do scholars view Sharia? Greater than Sharia punishments in Islam? Greater than why Muslims are Sharia averse? Blogshaker.shalimarinsurance.com https://shakir2.wordpress.com/ https://www.facebook.com/shakir.mumtaz https://n.wikipedia.org/wiki/user_talk-shakirm/sandbox Islam's liberalization https://n.wikipedia.org/wiki/user-shakirm Moral Philosophy https://shakir2.wordpress.com/2014/.10/disjunctive-2 Sharia. Send authorization request to reproduce or republish the articles at sheikhhermantaz2@gmail.com. Thanks. Comment/like/share/follow and subscribe. Shakir Mumtaz. Author, thinker, analyst.